The death-dealing immoralities of his purposes demoralize all parts of him, curtail his beautiful powers, paralyze his natural energies, and defeat him every step of the way, from the cradle to the coffin. But a consolation is at hand. Death is a chemical screen, a strainer, a finely woven sieve, through which, by the perpetual flow of the laws of Mother Nature, individuals are passed on to their true stations in the Summerland. The squares in the death sieve are so exceedingly fine that only finest particles and certain powers and principles can go through, while on the earthside is peeled off and cast down a lifeless man of bones and fleshly corruption. A process of refinement is this wondrous chemico-sieve death experience. The spirit with the encasing soul, hidden centers of life, all the characteristics that have distinguished, and all the motives that have influenced the person, all these easily pass through the death strainer, the screen or sieve, while the physical body and its particles, which cannot pass through, are dropped, and what is more gratifying, with the physical body are left behind many of those hereditary predispositions and abnormal conditions which gave rise to discordant passions and false appetites, called demons and unclean spirits. The causes of these demons and unclean spirits remain on the earth side of the death strainer, while the effects, which those causes exerted on the soul, being so fine and so mixed with the soul substance, pass through, and remain with the individual long after he has attained to his social center in the Summerland. Persons, or, rather, individualities, are not therefore destroyed by death. Nothing is changed save the dense physical form and the low material world in which they live. This chemical screen age, this extraordinary refining process and preparation, is one which all have to submit to at the end of the present life. The effect there is like the birth of each into the present world. Much is elevated to the world into which we come at birth while, at the same moment, and by the same process much is left behind in the reproductive sphere. In the temperaments and characteristics of the individual are laid the foundations of the different social centers that exist in the different mansions of the Father's house that was not built with hands. Those mansions, or to continue the figure, the different rooms, are inhabited by classes of persons who have taken with them, through the death strainer, different intellectual, spiritual, and social characteristics, integral attributes and temperamental individualities of character-ruling affections, and the effects of propensities that have been generated and strengthened by long-continued practices in this world before death. Regeneration is a spiritualizing process, the same after death as it sometimes is before. If the person starts from earth interiorly cleansed, he will arrive at the next sphere in a corresponding condition. If the persons start from their death screener with the earth, the flesh, and the demoniac influences impressed upon their souls, they will arrive at and sojourn in appropriate social centers, with the accumulated effects still influencing the inner life and the manifestations of the affections. Thus radical differences in men and women cause different societies in the next sphere. Are there not many persons about you, perhaps dwelling every day in your homes, who have no part or lot in your cherished sentiments and happiest experiences? You sit at the dining table, you look into the eyes of a person on the opposite side, and lo, you are strangers by leagues, perhaps you are whole ages asunder. Different sentiments, different attractions, and different social habits, give rise to different societies. Perhaps husband and wife, or brother and sister, though living in this world in the same house, eating at the same table, will become members of spiritual societies as far apart as the poles asunder. Society would be everywhere monotonous, both on earth and in the succeeding sphere, if individuals were all alike, all cast with the same combination of temperaments. You begin plainly to comprehend, I think, that if these things are true on earth, about you and in you, death not destroying you, there must be great diversities among the inhabitants in the Summerland. These various supermundane societies are predicated upon the continuation of the radical distinguishing characteristics of men and women. There are, consequently, societies embodying many of the effects of the immoral motives and degrading purposes by which women and men have been actuated and made miserable in this world. This is an important and momentous truth. The Summerland is a natural state of human existence, growing out of the universal system of causes and effects, laws and ultimates, just as logically and scientifically as today grew out of yesterday. Are you not today, in all parts of your being, the legitimate result of what the laws, conditions, and experiences of yesterday made you? You are dead to yesterday. Your life is here and now. All you know of yesterday is remembrance. No man or woman can live in any past hour, except in the chambers of intangible memory. You live now, and thus it will be innumerable ages hence. The universal verdict of reason will be this ever-present consciousness of existence, the past a ghost of the memory, the future an unfinished picture, illuminated by the inextinguishable lights of eternal hope. Throughout innumerable ages, the past will appear like a dream, while the future will be a subject of curiosity, of surprise and attractiveness, in the succeeding ages of eternal life. Tomorrow is new and attractive to those who live truly in the present. None can tell with absolute certainty what will happen tomorrow. There is, nevertheless, an universal confidence in its coming, because of the immutable and perpetual flow of nature's laws, causing the revolution of the planets and the rising and setting of suns. Thus all men believe that tomorrow will surely come. Now I will put a question: if your common reason tells you so clearly of earthly things, why can you not believe your wiser intuitions and their superior logic when they tell you of heavenly things? If ye believed that the progression of months and years will surely bring you up to the chemical screen called death, why can ye not also believe that the shining river which flows skyward, in harmony with the noiseless rotation of this planet, will float you through that screen to a social center in the Summerland? All men go forward with their thoughts and anticipations, believing, with the simplicity of very young children, that tomorrow will come. This, I say, is the uprising voice and irrepressible logic of intuition, aided and confirmed by experience, and made practical by the constant, habitual exercise of the reasoning faculties. All men naturally expect to live over the present, into tomorrow. Thus mankind buy lands, and hire carpenters, and build beautiful houses, and nicely furnish their new-made homes, as though everything, including personal existence, was vouchsafed to last forever on earth. But this is the usual experience. After all is completed and fully prepared, the house garnished and swept, and everything put in order for a long, luxurious physical life on earth, then the death screen drops. The interior person passes through in the twinkling of an eye, and the rich, lawful heirs are left to weep, to put away in the ground what the screen refused, and to live as long and comfortably as they can upon the property of the deceased. It is easy for the human mind to fix its imagination upon a long life in this world. So common was this inverted testimony of the fancy, that the ancient Jews supposed the kingdom of heaven was certainly coming on the earth. Mankind, they thought, were not to ascend a progressive Jacob's ladder. The heavenly kingdom was to be drawn down out of the supernatural realm and made literally manifest here, a fancy in religion to which Adventists are strongly attached, so that great wildernesses would blossom, animals internally opposed to each other would become harmonious, and lions and lambs would, in peace and friendship, lie down together. Christians, with more ideality, put a spiritual interpretation upon the literalness of the Hebrew scriptures, and thus made tolerable common sense of what thousands of Jews believed to be true from a very different standpoint. In the Lord's Prayer, which contains many Jewish thoughts and expressions, we find this double meaning allusion to the kingdom of heaven. Now what, think you, was intended by that prayer? This answer seems correct. It was designed to float the mind out of materialism into spiritual thought and holy aspiration. The kingdom of heaven, to the soul that uttered the prayer, was a condition of intellectual, social, and spiritual harmony, in which mental condition pure truth would reign triumphant, even as it prevails in every beautiful and harmonious family in the Summerland, with whom dwell harmony, peace, and eternal happiness. The Lord's Prayer is a conception which, interiorly viewed, does fully harmonize with the deductions of philosophy, but it was as legitimate a development from the Jewish basis of literalism as flowers are natural growths from the germs which precede them. The prayer was constructed with a literal kingdom of heaven in it, so that the Jewish mind could grasp it, and adopt it in its rituals, and thus pray for the downcoming and universal expansion of the Spirit's beautiful truths. Now this is my testimony. The Summerland, as to the origin of the social centers, is made of persons from all parts of this inhabitable globe not only, but populations also from far distant planets that are constituted like this Earth, each globe producing an infinite variety of radical personal characteristics and temperamental differences. All these individuals carry upon the life within their faces, as well as in the secret chambers of their affections, the effects of life on the globe that produced them. If the person has been moved and governed by high and beautiful motives, he naturally and instinctively seeks association with those who have been similarly actuated and developed. If, on the other hand, the person has been led by low and demoralizing motives, he as naturally seeks those who, before death, had been correspondingly influenced. There a man can elect his friends and gravitate to his own congenial social center. In fact, he can tell before he goes, by looking through the death screen, or strainer, with what manner of minds he will probably live, at least until the redemptive evangel of regeneration through repentance and progression reaches his affections, until perfectly pure purposes are born in him, the same in effect whether he starts from a Methodist prayer meeting in New York City, or from the center of some spiritual society in the fragrant groves of the Summerland. Progression out of imperfection is a purely spiritual transaction, growing out of the same general causes and resulting in the same internal effects upon character. Societies, in general terms, are natural exponents of the interior realities of the societies of men and women on different planets. There is there a society or province called Altalissa. Persons have returned from it and testified that they were, while dwellers of Earth, almost wholly influenced by the idea of gaining money, position, power among men. And it would seem that these invisible characters are influential still among those who are similarly organized and influenced in this world. When persons are actuated by the selfish motives to accumulate wealth, power, position, and influence, they become mediums to some extent. As the violet absorbs all but the blue ray, or as a red flower absorbs all but the red color, so is the mind of man in its impressibilities and mediumship. He will take on all that for which he has affinity. He will absorb from each society in the Summerland precisely such influences as are in accordance with big magnetic powers, and he will exclude all other influences, from whatever source. Now if the death strainer, or screen, was not perfect, if, when passing through the chemical change, we do not leave the causes of appetites and passions behind us, then, in truth, men in this world would really be injured and degraded by contact with the unseen populations. But men are benefited, and not injured, by such contact. Now and then men are stimulated somewhat in their course, but they are not degraded, are not made worse by the contact, only patted on the back, battered by unwise spirits, and sometimes approved, as a too fond mother approbates her pet child even in its errors. So men, moving in very low and moralizing circles in this world, will sometimes experience a sort of self-satisfaction and contentment. They do not have those fine compunctions of conscience, which so many pious people imagine they must necessarily have. These feelings are for a time laid aside, not by the use of tobacco, alcohol, and opium, but by sympathetic contact with those spirits who are not wise and grown in purity. Such characters on earth absorb the rays of spirit life that are congenial to them, and exclude all the others. Thus you see men moving as earnestly against the truth as for it. It is a matter of astonishment to many Northmen how the Southerners can have their religious meetings and political gatherings, appoint a day for sincere prayers to be sent to the kingdom of heaven, and do all things just like the loyal and religious people of the North. Do you suppose that men who have gone from the ranks of rebeldom, and who have passed through the screen of death, suddenly lost all religious and political notions on the deathbed? No. The rule works both ways. They have a political scheme and a religious experience, and both were to them genuine. These return to their brethren in the South. When earnestly engaged in devotion and prayer, the Southerner feels as heaven-approved as the Northerner. You know that the discordant man, who walks Broadway with murder in his heart, can see the sun as clearly as can the man of peace. A morally bad character can physiologically eat and drink and sleep just as well as can the best. The laws that operate in your physical being operate the same in his. He goes round with the planet, experiences the flow and recession of emotions, but he can only absorb those influences from society with which he has affinity, and he knows nothing of what others experience. Suppose, for example, that I should exchange pulpits with the evangelical brother who lectures every Sunday in Grace Church. The ladies and gentlemen there would absorb from me only those thoughts and sentiments for which they have an educational sympathy. They would reject everything else. There would be between us no sympathy, no fellowship, yet they are constituted just like ourselves, and in 10 years from this they may come to feel me we do. But it is not at all likely that we shall ever feel as they do, because souls cannot go back. Hence those who go to the Summerland cannot return just as bad as they were before they started. Going through death cleansed them largely of causes, conditions, and temptations, leaving with them the results treasured up in their affections, in their sympathies, in their antipathies, inclinations, disinclinations, loves, hates, attractions, and repulsions. Of course they have sympathy only for congenial associations in that better life, but such associations are, necessarily, on a higher plane than though they were of earth. Their higher plane, however, is so little removed, so slightly shaded off from that in which they lived while here, that it requires but little change to feel themselves at home. True, contradictory characters often go to the Summerland. Sometimes imagination gets the start of conscience. The youth feels, thinks, hopes beyond his powers to grasp or attain, but as the years roll through the spirit, he grows gradually solid, and strong, and practical. Conscience is not fully born in some souls until after death, that is, the idea of right and wrong is to them a theory. I have seen persons, who, having a very large sense of right and wrong, wondered how their most intimate acquaintances could do things diametrically antagonistic to such sense without being surprised or astonished, and still live among folks just as though nothing had happened. It is because the conscientious part of the spirit had not yet been fully born. The person might have been born on 3 or 5 sides of his character, and yet there remain other parts no born from error and wrong, and hence the defectiveness, hence, also, the monstrosity which the character and conduct of such a person presents, deceiving, murdering, robbing, yet thinking nothing more of the self-condemnation of his crimes than most men do of transacting their ordinary business. It is because these men have not as much light in principles as you, they do not yet perceive the white ray of pure justice, they cannot take it in, any more than a red plant could take in the red ray. So a man who cannot absorb the principle of justice is a man who cannot comprehend its requirements. Society is constructed so as to require regeneration and progression. The Christian system prays for the better time. Nicodemus asked how a man could be taken out of his defects, brought out of the flesh and made as pure as spirit. Jesus did not answer him in common words, but told him that as he could not understand the ordinary phenomena of nature, the blowing of the wind, for example, he certainly could not understand that which was interior and far more extraordinary, like the birth of the Spirit. It has been ascertained by multitudes of witnesses, by experiments, and by conversations with those who have returned from the Summerland, that those who have demoralizing motives in this life have the greatest density on their arrival. In Altalissa, the section where many persons go, who, in this world, lived wholly under the influence of selfishness, the population seems about as comfortable as general society on earth. Jews still believe in the doctrine of their fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the Roman Catholics hold the same views they did before death, and there are other sects in Altalissa who think and believe in the same things and forms of faith they learned on earth. The sects will long continue in their various sympathies and educational associations. Of course, progressively and quite imperceptibly, this world will grow better and more harmonious. Men will intuitively differ li and lo equals upon fundamental principles. But in the four details, in the ramifications of thought, this endless variety of convictions and affinities will prevail. The foundations for countless and various societies in the Summerland are thus laid and established. Death is largely a cleansing process, and is the hope of the world, not its point of darkness. So beautiful are its siftings, strainings, and other processes, that the active causes of passions and appetites are dropped and left on earth with the gross materiality. So beautiful is the law of progress, that even the active effects that accompany the individual cannot be perpetuated, as evils and discords, throughout eternity. Why? Because in the center of the universe a positive power reigns, breathing its spirit throughout the illimitable spaces, and by the slow workings of its progressive laws, it cleanses all personalities of their transient imperfections. Only eternal good can eternally exist. There is a universal gathering of all spirits and angels, not in one place, under the blaze of one heavenly central run, but under the influence of musical distributions, of harmonious varieties, each adding completeness and happiness to the other. Many persons are harmonized in this world when they are born again, and thus lifted out of their low motives and consequent imperfections. Hundreds and thousands of things that annoy, vex, and wear the spirit before it is thus born, cease to exert any bad effect. Such minds grow sweet, and gentle, and loving, under the new life, before, the same persons were hateful, discordant, and full of consuming passions. The evil woman, who had 7 devils cast out of her, an instance of what good can be accomplished by exchanging bad motives for good ones. How many hateful propensities, how many demonic habits, and how many unladylike characteristics were eased out of her by the psychological power, is left to everyone's imagination. The Catholics believe that each purified soul has died to the influences of this world. The Shakers hold a similar white banner over the redeemed: come in and dwell with us, put on the plain garb, renounce the world's evil habits and cruel customs, among other things the evils of marriage and marriage itself, and you will be saved, for thus you die to the world. Nuns enter convents under the psychological impression that before death they can leave the world and its sins, become spiritually sweet and beautiful, and acceptable brides for the only son. There is a poetic sublimity in the thought. Now there are persons yet in the world who know that they can put their crushing heel on the serpent's head. They have learned that they can resist striking a brother, in passion, and, what is far better, they can resist the passion which would suggest the blow. Strong, vigorous, full-blooded men, have conquered the demon of passion. Such conquering heroes would not go among the heathens who live in sections of the Summerland, except as moral policemen, as a philanthropists, but never in the capacity of associates. And yet you know that there are men, and women, too, who hugely enjoyed the heathen style of life. They like the very thought of it, the exciting manifestations of it, and the large, beautiful, abandoned animality which it displays and endorses. If they enjoy it, how do they enjoy it? Do they by means of their physiological or phrenological organs? They enjoy it by means of those talents and faculties which live within physical organs, and which the screen age of death does not refine away and crush out of the person. Therefore there is a great individual work here to be done. The ounce of prevention is wanted, which will make the tons of cure unnecessary. Each person can start on the right track before death. This is the best place to get under full sail for a happier harbor. Today is better than tomorrow. The sooner you begin, the farther you will find yourself in the path of harmonious life. This is the doctrine which we are impressed to teach. I think all should commence at once to see what can be done toward preparing for a better, sweeter screen age at death, and to ensure a beautiful entrance into superior societies. No one can hurt the Infinite Father nor the Infinite Mother. You can permanently injure only yourself. This being the truth, we have but to proclaim, "Repent ye, for the kingdom of heaven is, next door, just beyond, on the other side of the death screen, through which each must sooner or later pass." How many persons will feel, after attaining the elevation of self-control, that they have begun anew? But how many cross, sour countenances, there will be while going through the trial of trying to be good? If Nicodemus could have understood that to be born of water was a natural and indispensable forerunner of being born of the Spirit, he would have first given attention to the correction of his personal habits and physical appetites. Thus he would have had more harmonious, more sweet, and more beautiful bodily sensations. He would have become a better neighbor and a truer governor in Israel, a more agreeable companion, and there would have been a cheerful, buoyant, juvenile flow of light, joy, and peace, within his lifted spirit. In short, he would have soon experienced the difference between a son of God and a son of Belial. I know it is a hard doctrine to preach, that now is the accepted time. But this death screen, which hangs before us, is as certain to fix upon each the effects of habits and mental conditions as the tomorrow will be the natural result of the causes and conditions of today. Each person can in this world select his associations after death. It is, therefore, important to get a passport to harmonious central societies in the Summerland. You should feel no enmity toward any human being, however much you have been injured. The lion and the lamb lie down together only within the purified human spirit. The hidden, cave-like cerebellum, the back brain, is a den full of untamed animals. Spiritual truth is the only conqueror that can enter and still the passions, tame them to peace, and hold them in abeyance until the outward disturbance is gone. Motives, when high, lift up the soul, which is thus prepared to be a better neighbor and more successful in all the genuine enterprises of present life. All true progress brings an immediate and glorious satisfaction. We discourse upon 6, life and immortality. Not because it is a spiritual fact, but because it is the foundation and inspiration of immediate personal improvements. It stimulates us to beautiful effort, and causes us to teach practical reforms. We can bring innumerable tests and mathematical evidences that these things, which we relate with respect to the other sphere, are true, but time will supply you with all necessary testimonies. Many of them you have already heard, many of them you know by heart, and ask for nothing more. Now, therefore, the time has come for each to step upon the solid rock of truth, of eternal principles, which will surely stand, while the Spirit makes substantial progress toward higher and more beautiful societies which blossom beyond the stars. Next headline, Winterland and Summerland. Open thy soul to God, O man, and talk through thine unfolded faculties with him who never, save through faculties of mind, spake to the fathers. Portions of the New Testament are opulent with hints of eternal truths. They are parts of the unspeakable harmonies of God and nature. In the writings of John, chap. 19, v. 2, there is a beautiful, social, spiritual affirmation, which begins, "In my Father's house." Like a child he speaks of his father's possessions in a pleasant and grateful spirit. In my father's house there is one immense room, no separate chambers and no compartments, adapted to only one family of one mind and one faith. Does it read so? No, but it would suit the orthodox sectarians if the verse were so written. The passage reads thus, "In my father's house there are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you." Yes, If there were not many mansions in the house of God, the intuitive Nazarene would have known the fact.